All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. Our next guest on the show today is Ed Krajewski. He's from Reason Magazine, reason.com. Welcome to the show, Ed. How are you doing?
Good, great. Very happy to be here.
And love your show. Was I close on your last name there?
Yeah, you got it, Krajewski.
Krajewski. Okay, great.
More right than most people do the first time. So. Yeah.
Well, I learned from Karen Kotowski that just drop a lot of those letters in the middle and say it fast, and it'll come out right. So.
Yeah, that's a pretty good tip.
There you go. All right. Love polls. All right. Unbelievable. I don't know. I better let you say, because I've been going on and on for 2 hours now, hour and a half already about this. SWAT team reportedly throws flashbang grenade, burns toddler during no-knock raid. What do you know about this story?
Yeah, I know it's insane, because the sheriff, what makes it insane, first of all, these kind of things unfortunately happen way too often in America. And a lot of times it's not children this young that get hurt and injured, but a lot of times it is youth that get injured by the police. What made this one especially incredible was that the sheriff basically said there was nothing they could do to prevent it, as if the idea that maybe, you know, your sheriff's department in some town or county with 10, 20,000 people in North Georgia needs to be doing no-knock raids for simple hand-to-hand drug interactions. Because as far as I can tell from different reporting on it, they didn't find any drugs there. So this really sounds like they had an informant. The informant said, hey, this house, I can buy drugs at it. He went, he bought drugs at that house. The cops saw him do it, and they came back a couple days later with a warrant and a military unit. And that's ridiculous, you know, because you think about marijuana possession, marijuana use, even other drugs. These are nonviolent behaviors, and the police are the ones introducing violence into the situation. Right. And in cases like this, when they say there's nothing we can do about it, it really just shows how they're so staked, these law enforcement, district attorneys, prosecutors, government employees, they're so staked in the drug war because it makes them so much money. You know, where would this sheriff be? Where would this SWAT team be without a drug war? They'd be out of a job. You know, a lot of these police officers, I can't imagine them doing anything else other than ordering Americans around. And so the drug war gives them all these laws and all these prohibitions that they can go and they can make war on people. And it's a literal war far too often. And I think the sheriff's attitude in this specific case just shows how far gone these people are. The only way we're going to end the drug war is if people start caring about it and stop caring about things like Donald Sterling or the latest hashtag on Twitter and actually start looking at the systemic violence that the American population is subject to.
Right. Well, you know, I think the way you state that, it's so important just to state it so honestly that, you know, forget all the mythology and all the terminology. These people are not our security force if they're not acting as our security force. If they are acting as predators, they are predators. It's just like Dianne Feinstein talking about, well, who's a journalist? A journalist is anyone who has ever or is in the act of doing journalism right now. Shut up. That's the answer.
Absolutely.
Right? Well, these guys, if they're going around attacking tiny little children, then maybe they are the criminals. Maybe all their, you know, as Will Griggs says, all their costume jewelry notwithstanding, they're just another gang of criminal predators in our society. And you don't have to be a communist, and you don't have to be a libertarian. You don't have to be any kind of political anything to see it that way. This is just a normal way for normal humans to perceive their predators as predators. That's what they are. They're out to get us under the name of being our protectors. But as you said, we see this kind of thing all the time, and there's no way that that's hyperbole. I mean, literally all the time we see this so-called collateral damage in the war on the drug trade and drug possession in America.
Absolutely. And you know what? And it targets marginalized populations, so it's easier for the media not to cover. It's easier for the people in charge to ignore and to pretend it doesn't happen. I think you're right, and I think with the costumes they wear and the shields that they have, it's just such a powerful psychic tool on people, you know, so they give them so much of a benefit of the doubt because you've got a uniform on. And, you know, I actually got an email about this story earlier this morning from a military guy, said he's a major in the Army now. They have stricter rules of engagement than police officers in the United States do. You know, if this happened in Afghanistan, there's a good chance that the guy who threw the flashbang grenade into a home with a child in it would be facing charges. And I think too often they try to, police officers try to connect themselves as if, oh yeah, we're just like the military. And we're just, and it's like, you're not. You know, you have rules of engagement that are a lot more liberal. And the things police officers get away with on the streets of the United States, an occupying force would not get away with in most of the world.
And just think about that. When, by definition, the Army's job is to destroy, to kill enemies. And the cop's job is to protect the rights of the most violent and dangerous predator suspects
well,
that
I
they arrest. That's their mandate, is that even if you kill your whole family and they show up and you got an axe, they're supposed to try to take you down with the minimal amount of force and then keep you safe in jail where the mob can't get to you until you get your fair trial. And that's supposedly the premise of their job. And you're saying, and I don't know exactly how true that is, but at least the fact that their rules of engagement are in any way comparable to the Delta Force waxing Afghans, who, you know, apparently have no right any American is bound to respect, and that's exact same way that they're treating families in our own neighborhoods, is completely ludicrous. It's absolutely out of control.
And I think a part of it is because we think that the job of a police officer should be to protect the community. But I think for too many police officers and police apologists, a police officer's job is to get home safe at night. And honestly, if a police officer wants a job where his job is to get home safe at night, he can go work at McDonald's. I'm tired of public government officials, government employees talking about how they're public servants and how they're doing a service to the community. If you're afraid of being a cop, there's 100 cops in Seattle. I don't know if you read the story earlier this week. They're suing because they say that the new use of force rules that the Department of Justice is mandating in Seattle are too strict for them to do their job, and so they're afraid to go on the streets. You know what? Get another job. These people, they didn't get a lawyer, so they actually filed this lawsuit themselves, 100 cops. They're arguing that they have a Fourth Amendment right to reasonably search and seize you. That's how twisted the official understanding of the Constitution is in communities like police force. Right.
Like, yeah, it's like when Sarah Palin said that you know, she had a First Amendment right when she was running for vice president. She had a First Amendment right from being criticized by the media. And why weren't they respecting it?
And they live in this bubble. People like her, people like the police officers, they live in this bubble where they really think that the Constitution, they said at some point that the Constitution does not give judges the right to review what they did on the street. That's exactly what the Constitution permits. Yeah. You commit a crime, and you get judged, and it gets reviewed. And just because you're a cop, just because you have that costume jewelry, doesn't mean that you're not supposed to follow the same rules. Now, the fact that they've used public unions, and they've used the democratic process to really carve out some incredibly strong protections for their jobs, doesn't change the fact that, at its basis, our constitutional republic does not permit for certain people to be treated as a better class of citizen than other people, just because those people work for the government, or serve for the government, or whatever word they want to use for it.
Right, they're authorized to use defensive force, simple as that. You know, when I was a little bitty kid and first learned about James Bond and A License to Kill, I learned that no government has the authority to license anyone to kill because they don't have the authority to kill. There's no one to license that because no one has that authority, not till Judgment Day.
Absolutely. And I think, but that's the problem. You know, the government says it does, and it thinks that it does, and that's where ultimately, you know, the fact that everyone's okay with the government having an exclusive monopoly on the use of violence is what makes a lot of this violence persistent. You know, and even if you look at the gun control debate, and I say, well, you know, somebody shoots a bunch of people, so it's time to take away guns. The government kills people every day. You know, I'll give away my gun when Barack Obama gives away his drones.
The government does drugs every day, too.
It's just insane. The weak, the marginalized.
I've seen judges do cocaine right in front of me before, so.
Well, there was a story about what I was just a couple months ago, I covered, and it was like a drug court judge whose buddy had just been selected as a judge, and so they went to party at his, like, shore house or something, and the guy ended up overdosing on cocaine.
Well, I used to be a cab driver, man, and I used to see government employees, the highest level types, the most honorable ones, abusing drugs and drug laws on a regular basis. I'm sorry, we got to take this stupid break. We'll be right back with Ed Krajewski right after this.
Yep.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show here. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Ed Krajewski. He's an associate editor at Reason Magazine. That's reason.com online there. And we're talking about this story. SWAT team reportedly throws flashbang grenade, burns toddler, just barely toddler, baby to me, during no-knock raid. I guess you couldn't fit Nelson Rockefeller invented no-knock raid there. But anyway, I always like to smear his legacy any chance I get with honesty and factual information. So here, everybody, listen to this for a second here. The cop says, and what happened was they threw the flashbang in right into the crib, through the window, or broke the window, threw it in, right into the crib. It exploded in this tiny baby's face. The doctors have induced a coma. I guess I'm hypothesizing that to prevent him from dying of the shock if he had to live through the trauma of the pain that he's in right now. So they've induced a coma and, you know, to try to save his life. And the cop's attitude is, suck it. I've talked to the DA. I've talked to the GBI. I've given them the whole information. They say there's nothing else we can do. There's nothing to investigate. There's nothing to look at. Given the information given, GBI's SWAT team, which GBI is, I guess, just the
Georgia Bureau of Investigation.
Oh, there you go, the state police. Their SWAT team would have done the exact same thing. They'd have used the exact same scenario to enter the house. And, you know, I think actually the GRU would have done the same thing too, which also makes it okay. And so that's it. The state police are satisfied. The DA is satisfied. The entire sheriff's department is satisfied. And there's no one else to check the balance other than, you know, maybe Eric Holder will do a civil rights investigation. But again, they went by the book when they maimed this little baby. So what really is the problem? Don't they have, Ed, sovereign immunity from prosecution for this crime?
Yeah, they do, unfortunately. It's a very high bar to be able to convince a grand jury or DA to prosecute a cop for anything, you know. They did it to that one cop in North Carolina who shot a guy who had been in a car accident. But, for example, there was another cop in Arkansas who shot a 15-year-old, and he was tried three times before they finally threw it out because you just can't. So you find 12 jurors who are not so enamored by the culture of the police and by the idea that these are our protectors. And it's like that line from RoboCop, you know, it's like if the police strike, the whole country will be in chaos. And that's obviously not true. I think we'd be fine if the police striked. But a lot of people don't think that. A lot of people live their lives in fear, and they're afraid of everything. They're afraid of guns. They're afraid of black people. They're afraid of bad neighborhoods. They're afraid of the Muslims. They're afraid of terrorists. They're afraid of bouncy balls. They're afraid of Four Loko. You know, they're just afraid of everything. And they're the people who drive American politics, and honestly, who drive politics in every country, and why our governments are just so particularly vicious. Because these are the people who motivate government. These are the people who are afraid of everything. And if it was up to them, they would love for the government to just put them in a camp where they can be safe. And they can get paid $15 an hour to flip a burger or whatever and have all their cares taken care of, all their needs taken care of by the government, and never have to worry about the big, scary world out there. You know, and that's just so backwards, because who are we? You know, as human beings, we're there to explore the unknown. You know, that's how we got as far as we did. Capitalism was able to free as many people as it did because we kept pushing the boundaries, we kept pushing the limits, we kept saying, what else can we do as human beings? And look at us now. Now we're so afraid of our neighbor that we want to turn our cop into a soldier.
Man, I like this guy, you know? This is good stuff, Ed. And I'm with you 100%. And, you know, it's a damn tragedy, especially in this country with, you know, I mean, really, you look at who populates this country. It's mostly the people who are brave enough to abandon their old homeland to come here.
Yeah.
You know, my wife, her father did everything he could. He bet their lives to try to get her out of the Soviet Union. That's not messing around, right? That's like, that makes him the baddest ass man on this planet to do everything he possibly could to get her to America, not for him, for her, you know?
And yeah, no, absolutely.
Our whole country is populated with the sons and daughters of people like that. And yet, everything that you just said is exactly true about whatever significant enough plurality of our population that allows things like this to just continue on indefinitely.
Yeah, you know, I guess it's Nixon's silent majority strikes again, you know? The people you never expect, because they're just normal people, but then they get home and they're just afraid of everything. And it's sad, you know, and it's like when tragedies like the one in Santa Barbara happens, when you really see just how afraid people are, you know. Here's a state that has some of the strictest gun control laws in the country, and people are still blaming the NRA because, oh, it's just another thing to be afraid of. What is the NRA? The NRA is just a lobby group. Lobby groups don't really have, aside from a couple of them, they don't really have that much power, you know. At the end of the day, there's not more gun control in this country because, frankly, there's not enough people, not enough of those really scared people to take our guns away. You know, there's still that kind of respect for that.
Yeah, or the ones who, a lot of them that are scared to death, they have guns too, so that accidentally puts them on the right side of that particular issue. Although probably a lot of them would have everybody else's guns banned if you asked them. But
well, that's the Mike Bloomberg, Piers Morgan thing, right? They want to ban guns, but they're rich enough to be able to afford private armed security.
Right.
And in California, it was that guy Leland Yee, state senator, big gun control advocate. What was he caught doing by the FBI? Trying to traffic guns.
And meanwhile, you know, anybody who doesn't have that gun control agenda takes one look at what happened in California the other day and immediately blame the kid's father. Where was his father, who should have been whooping his ass and making him into a decent person and not raising this little scumbag? That's who's responsible, other than the actual scumbag with the trigger finger, is the father. Come on.
And look at his attitude. You know, they called the cops on him, and that's it. It's as if that was the only responsibility he had. And the kid bragged. He was like, oh, if the cops had searched my bedroom, they would have found the gun. Obviously, the cops couldn't search your bedroom because they didn't have probable cause, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing we live in a country with those kind of protections. But at the end of the day, if you're a 21, 22-year-old grown-ass man living with your parents should probably be searching your bedroom. And if they think you're going to go crazy, as a parent, you're
especially
right.
Especially
this
kid.
The nail in the head. The parent's responsibility is to make sure their child doesn't do something like this. A parent's responsibility is not to just call the police and say it's out of our hands. And as long as we continue to think that the government is the solution to all our problems, and I think you really hit the nail on the head with this Santa Barbara thing, because that's exactly what it is. This father, and they call the police, and that's as if that was their only responsibility. You know, and it's a typical liberal attitude. It's, I don't have to help poor people. I don't have to go to the food bank and the soup kitchen to help out. I can just vote for higher taxes, and someone else will take care of it. That's not community. That's not the way we build communities. That's not the way you organize. You don't organize a community by demanding more from other people. You organize a community by demanding more from ourselves.
All right, now back to this particular atrocity here. Again, it's at the recent Hit-and-Run blog. You can read all about it. SWAT team throws flashbang grenade, burns toddler in the face. Really bad.
And
the doctors
got
put
a new
him
post
in a coma
on it, actually,
again.
Right now, that's very interesting.
I'm sorry?
For you. Jacob Thome just put a post up about the same.
Oh, okay, great. And now listen,
listeners would love.
Now here's the thing about it. I believe I heard you right that you're being a bit sarcastic about everybody obsessed with their damn hashtags, and you said, oh, if only you get the right hashtag, maybe we could end the drug war. But that got me thinking that actually, man, I think that you're right about that. And I think everything is about, well, it's about impressions. This is what my friend Jonathan told me a long time ago. He says, Scott Worden, you're obsessed with all these facts and names and dates and all this stuff. But the basic idea is everybody else, they don't care about this stuff like you. They go with their impression. So if their impression is that the consensus is that we have to have a war on drugs, I mean, come on, then that's what they're going to be for. And if their impression is that the consensus is that, yeah, that's what we used to think, but now we don't think that anymore. Not the libertarians, not this particular brand of right-winger or this particular brand of left-winger, but just we, the Americans. We don't believe in that anymore. We used to believe in that. Yeah, it's true. But anyway, it's all right because now the new consensus is that we just don't want to have a drug war anymore. And it seems like, I don't know, man, why can't this poor baby be the last one? Why can't we do a Yes All Women or Bring Back Our Girls or one of these like really global headline attention grabbing hashtag campaigns? That enough of this war against each other and ourselves here. It's national suicide. It's madness at the expense of this most innocent little baby. Enough, right?
Absolutely. And I'm unfortunately a little more pessimistic, and so I just feel sometimes like people just tune out these stories, you know, because seeing the way the mob can just jump on an isolated incident, but then here you have a pattern of police abuse around the country, and nobody cares, you know. So, but I think you're right. I think the progressives are successful when they're able to appeal to emotion, and I think what libertarian and classical liberal ideas and anarchist ideas even have is that not only are they emotionally resonant, they also have logic and rationality to back them up.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
Unique among our group.
Exactly. Agreed. You know, and that's what we have to use more. And I think sometimes we forget that the emotions do matter. That indeed, making policies based on emotion is bad, and that's how you come up with bad laws.
Well,
but
drawing the parallels libertarians do between the war on guns, the nonsensical nature of the idea of a war on guns and war on drugs at the same time appeals to both sides and hopefully helps educate both sides as well. But we got to go. Thank you so much. It's Ed Krajewski from the Hit and Run blog over there at Reason.com. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.